episode of Desert Island Strips on a snowy day in Queens. I'm your host, Nasty Canasta, and my castaway on the island today is a multi-award-winning performance artist from New York City, who is known for her stunning costumes and unique interpretation of burlesque. Hailed as the Twisted Beauty, she brings a classic style combined with pop culture savvy and a dose of heavy metal to the stage. She's toured across the United States, and here in New York, she's the co-producer of Roar Burlesque and the Nerdlesque Festival. So welcome to the island, Danger Doll.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having me.
You described your job as stripping and making pretty things out of which other people undress. So we'll talk a little bit about the making things in a little bit. But I'm just always interested about why people choose the word for insert burlesque thing here that they do. So why stripping as opposed to burlesque dancer or whatever? What does that mean to you?
I don't know. I think because in the end, what we're doing is we're getting naked. And I mean, and not just physically, I mean, artistically, mentally, we're getting naked too. Like, the whole thing is stripping. That's why I love it, is because it's an art form where you're stripping not just your clothing, but you're stripping people's opinions about things, you're stripping people's sexuality, your own sexuality, and but in the end, it's just a whole fucking lot of stripping.
And I know a lot of your performances do get very naked in that emotional and, not just the physical sense.
Yeah.
What was your first, when you first started performing, I mean, what kind of performance, what kind of stripping were you initially interested
in? So when I first started doing burlesque, it was because I ran a Rocky Horror troupe at my college. And Rocky Horror shows have, like, a pre-show cabaret. It's usually, like, 30 minutes. And it's usually, like, sexy skits and, like, funny, dirty bullshit and whatever. And it's terrible college students or younger doing terrible things that they think are funny because they have the sense of humor of college students or younger. But so when I took over Rocky, it was run by, like, these five kinksters who were seniors in my college, who did things for their own enjoyment and no one else's, which is fine, but it didn't make for a very good show. And so it was my decision to change it. And so one of the ways that I did that was by incorporating striptease, which hadn't been in it yet, but should have been. And so I did it myself. And I didn't really know it was burlesque yet. But I guess it was. It wasn't very good, but it was what I was doing. And it was mostly, like, I mean, super cliched, like, goth stripping to Korn. I mean, it's what happened. And so really, my only intention with it at first was to make a better show for my show. Yeah. And then as I grew into it and, you know, and I figured out my creative outlets, because then at the time I also did a lot of other stuff, which I don't do anymore. And as I've sort of come to terms with myself as a person, I feel like I've added more artistry into it beyond the corn and the goblins. So yeah.
So one of the other things that you did then, you mentioned, was that the costuming and the making things. Have you always been a maker?
Mm-hmm. I've always been a maker. I got a sewing machine for my mom for Christmas in high school. And, I've never fit into clothing right. Mm-hmm. And I've always been huge on Halloween and costumes. Like, I used to make Halloween into, like, a month-long affair. And I would assign themes for all the days. And I would plan it out, like, a week in advance. And, like, I wrote out, like, a schedule. And I was insane about it. And so I loved making things. And then in college, I started making things for Rocky Horror, because at the time, it's very hard to find Nicole LeMay briefs anywhere. Now we have American Apparel, but at the time, we sure didn't. So we made a lot of stuff ourselves. We made a lot of the props ourselves and whatever, and ran with it. And then I started making my friends' Halloween costumes. Yeah.
And so within the, was it about a year now, or when did you kind of give up the day job, as it were, and start?
I quit in June.
So it's not even a year yet.
It's not even a year yet.
And you started Dangerous Designs.
Dangerous Designs! Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
Is that mostly costuming for other performers, for other burlesque people so far? Or?
So far, mm-hmm. but I would like to branch it out. Mm-hmm. Like, inevitably, in this month I'm working on sort of like a line of things mm-hmm. that I can almost mass produce. For burlesquers and boylesquers specifically, mm-hmm. I'm going to
That's
be working
fantastic.
On stuff for boylesquers because there doesn't really seem to be anything.
It seems to be a pretty underserved market.
It's a
it
very
were.
Underserved market, and I know that there's a lot of like really beautiful like gay club wear out there, mm-hmm. but it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they serve different functions. So,
do you have a kind of philosophy or style as a designer?
I like things that fit you really tight.
Mm-hmm. I can't argue with that.
That's really it. Mm-hmm. And I wanna make the corsetry and the panties really the top of my priority mm-hmm. list. So
the it's a cage panties.
Cage panties.
And you've started doing those for boys as well.
I have.
They're pretty spectacular.
Banned on Facebook because of them.
Is that does that sort of describe your style as a performer as well, the you know, your visual aesthetic?
I guess sometimes I tend to, and not reference based but mm-hmm. character based most of my acts, mm-hmm. and so a lot of the time the costume is sort of secondary to what I feel like the character of the number is going to be,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, in general I do like the aesthetics of my costumes to be tightly fitted and whatever, but that isn't always what I want. I think naked is really my aesthetic as a performer.
It is, isn't it? Naked even when you're dressed. It's actually just more apropos of things that you used to do, but you mentioned that you also have a culinary degree.
I sure do.
How did that happen?
It happened because I was at Brandeis University and I didn't know what I wanted to do at all, and I really didn't want to be there. And I'd started getting these terrible panic attacks, just total truth here.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible, like the heart attack kind of panic attacks. Mm-hmm. And I started getting them every day. And clearly I shouldn't have been there. And one of the only things that I was finding joy in at the time was cooking. And I cooked all the time, mm-hmm. You know, because I was in college. And I didn't, and I told my parents I felt like I wasn't learning anything and that I didn't know what I wanted to do and that I felt like I was wasting their money. But that I really wanted to go to culinary school, and that I thought that it would be really good for me and help me clear my head and also put me in a good direction. And they said, culinary school isn't real school. You can't go. We're not paying for that. And I said, okay. And I was really depressed and miserable, and I knew I didn't want to be there, and I knew there was no way that my parents would let me quit school.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to fail on purpose, and my guidance counselor said, you did so good your first semester, what happened? And I said, well, I just, you know, I've been really depressed, and I feel like my passion is in culinary school. And so my guidance counselor wrote a thing and said, okay, well, so Danger Doll is for a year, has probation for a year, she can't come back for a year. We feel that she should pursue her interest in culinary school. To show that she is
genius.
I'm not even kidding. Uh-huh. Like making achievements and maybe then she can come back after a year. And so my parents were like, you're going to culinary school. So I went to culinary school while I was on probation at Brandeis.
Right, and you have a degree that you claim you'll never use, but
I'll never use it. I'm never going to use it. Someday, when I have more time, maybe I'll have really good dinner mm-hmm. parties.
So, you are allowed three acts to bring to the island. So,
yes.
tell me about the first one that you chose. What act would you load onto the lifeboat with you?
So, the first act that I would bring with me is Ray Gunn's Jabberwocky number. And I just love it. I mean, just first of all, like, Ray moves so well, and he's a great choreographer.
Incredible.
And just, like, taking any concept away, he really knows what he's doing when he's dancing. So, just from that standpoint alone, it's highly entertaining. But then, like, I'm a complete and utter dork. The reason why my name is Danger with three R's is because three is the epic novel literary device
mm-hmm.
that they use in all of their epic listing. There's always three. There's three books. There's three quests. There's three whatever. And so, anyway, basically, I'm a total book dork. So the Jabberwocky really appeals to me from that standpoint. And it's just, it's a thing where there's been, I really like what Nerdlesque can do. I hate the word Nerdlesque. Oh, okay. I know, really it's like a rough one. what nerd burlesque can do. Because especially, like, as a person who's been a complete and utter geek all my life, you know, like, especially when you don't have a lot of confidence in yourself, or even when you do, you see so much of yourself in these characters. And everyone views all of these characters so differently. And I love that. And I think that that's, you know, a unique thing that nerd burlesque has to offer. And I think that it doesn't most of the time. And that makes me very sad. And when I've done nerdy burlesque, it's usually not very clear what's going on. And the reference is only obvious if you really know it or if you've talked to me about it. Which I like better because then everyone enjoys it. No, I think it makes so much more sense, you know? I mean, anything that's more inclusive is going to work better on a stage. It just is. But anyway. So his number, it really does that, you know? And so he comes out and he's in this sort of straight jacket thing. He's got kind of a Mad Hatter hat, but then, like, the words of the poem are written all over it in just this chaotic, you know, insane scribble, and it's so good, and he like, takes it all off and becomes the Jabberwocky. And it's so smart. It's just so smart, and it really gets the poem across without being like, I am doing the Jabberwocky, which makes me want to hit myself in the head. So it's just so good. For me, it's just like a prime example of what I want to see in movies. So I would really want that.
Said you're pretty much, I mean, you've been a whatever your term of choice is, nerd, geek, for forever, and yeah. I mean, obviously that does inform your performance in very specific ways. I mean, I've seen a lot of your acts that are, you know, a Tetris act, your surveillance act, which I, because I love 1984, is a 1984 act to me, whether that's exactly
it
came from for you. Does it inform your non reference acts in a large way as well?
Yeah, it definitely does. Because that's, you know, sort of like what I was saying to you, is even the ones without a reference still have a character. And I'm really, really bad at just stripping, which I think is a serious skill, FYI.
Oh, yeah.
That I have been working on. I really respect people who can just strip and be entertaining while they do it. But I tend to do things that are more sort of character, and, you know, I don't know.
Idea-based.
Theatrical, almost, perhaps.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that definitely informs that. I mean, that's absolutely why, is I've always been very story-driven as a person. And so it makes sense that the art I would create would be story-driven as well.
We have talked just on some of our epic drives to Canada and things like that, a little bit about the sort of state of nerd burlesque and classic burlesque sometimes being at odds, or the perception that they're at odds, or the feeling that they're at odds with each other at this point in time. And I know you've even talked about working under a different name
I've definitely thought about it.
Do you think that... So do you feel pigeonholed or at all in your
I definitely feel pigeonholed sometimes. I do. I think that people, when they're... Because I do classic numbers. And actually, I think my classic numbers are...
Which is why I'm always surprised by that.
Yeah, and I think my classic numbers are pretty decent at this point. And there are a lot of shows that I feel that I could really add to mm-hmm. that I know would probably not book me because I don't register on their, you know, in their brains as a classic performer. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because I have also established myself with the nerdy burlesque mm-hmm. and the more character-based things. And I get it, but it's really unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are, like, especially in New York, there's a lot of people who sort of skirt the line. And you know what? I've heard this complaint, though, actually, not just from people who do, like, nerdier burlesque, mm-hmm. but also from people who purely do more performance-arty burlesque,
oh, yeah.
who also
yeah.
do classic burlesque
yep.
perfectly well, but don't get considered for those things mm-hmm. because they're not known that way. Mm-hmm. But they probably would be known that way better. And I'm sure I would be known that way better. And I'm sure you would be known that way better if we were given more opportunities to express that mm-hmm. on stage.
When you're creating new numbers, and I know a lot of times it's creating a number for a show or for you know,
yeah.
whatever, but if that's not the case, if you don't have a specific assignment, then do you feel at all ever pressured? Like, oh, I guess I'd love to do some crazy ass thing, you know, but I really should just do a showgirl act with a headdress because that's what's going to get booked more. I mean, what do you...
The problem that I have is less so that, and that is definitely a problem that I've dealt with. And I did go through a whole period where I worked really hard on my class mm-hmm. in burlesque just for that. I find that the problem that I have more than that is fighting with myself either to make things that I want to make or to make things that can fit on our stages.
That's a huge thing, yes.
So I have I have maybe like 16 acts.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say at least a third of them I really can't do mm-hmm. almost anywhere in New York. And there's just, we have so many limitations.
It's really interesting how that defines, I think more than almost anything, not that there is a specific one, but the New York aesthetic.
It
the
really
of it.
Does. I remember going to, when I went to BHOF with Albert 2 years ago, and it was awesome. I really had a great time. But, so like the Queen competition that year was like half New Yorkers, and they all like killed it, and they were great, but you could tell the difference was that almost everyone who wasn't from New York had some sort of really big thing, be it a prop or a really big costume piece, and New Yorkers have really big personalities.
Yes.
Because we can't, you can't mm-hmm. have big, like, how are you going to lug that prop on the subway?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to bring the giant $1,000 feather anything
mm-hmm.
on the New York City subway?
it becomes a serious limitation in a
it's
lot of ways.
It's such a huge limitation. Yeah. And so I find myself lately refusing to let those limitations hamper me, but
mm-hmm.
trying to make things wherein they could be malleable for mm-hmm. travel,
mm-hmm.
for making them larger.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the biggest limitation mm-hmm. that I've found.
Tell me about your second act that you're going to throw in the lifeboat with you.
Oh, so the second act is Imogen Kelly's her white dress number, because it's like a white dress. It's got this huge hoop at the bottom, and then it's white sort of stretchy fabric, and it's just one dress, and she's got very simple hair, and she comes out and she's just playing with her dress, and there's this beautiful music playing, and so she's playing with her dress, and she's like hiding her face and doing kind of like peekaboo, and it's really whimsical, but also it's got all these beautiful moments, but it's so simple. And it's all about her personality. I mean, and it's a big dress because of the hoop, but it's so simple that it really just everything focuses on her face.
Mm.
And the way that she's playing, because she's playing in the dress. She's not stripping. She's playing in that dress. I mean, she takes it off, but she's just playing. She's having a great time. And it's incredible.
Thank you.
It was so incredible. I saw it from the side in Texas, and it was really gorgeous.
And you saw that at the Texas Festival?
Yeah.
So you've done, so 2013 was your year of festivals, pretty much. I mean, you went to a lot, and it was wonderful kind of following you vicariously through that. On the way, you picked up a few awards, which I feel compelled to mention because it's kind of fabulous.
Sure.
The Boston Burlesque Expo Most Humorous Act, the Oklahoma City Burlesque Festival Best Costume, the Carolina Burlesque Fest Most Original Act. You also have some Golden Pasty Awards from the New York Burlesque Fest.
Cutest geek.
How many festivals did you go to last year?
I went to 11 festivals.
That's a lot.
It's a fuck ton.
Why?
I did it because New York City is an insular little bubble, and I didn't want to be in it anymore. And I was getting really sick of being here. First of all, I was getting really sick of the hustle. I was getting really sick of the competition, which is there and fierce, whether people want to admit it or not. And I wanted to create more for myself than for other people, and I wanted to have fun instead of have stress. And I want people to know who I am, and I want to know who people are, and I want to see, because when we went to Beehive, it was so clear how different regions have different styles.
I wanted to see
all that. And so that's what I did. I went out and I saw a lot of burlesque, and I put myself out there and hopefully made a great impression and traveled, and it was awesome. It was so worthwhile. And I met so many just incredible people, and I saw so much good burlesque, and I saw so much bad burlesque. And I loved it. I loved every second of it. I really did.
What were some of your favorite festivals to do?
The Minneapolis Burlesque Festival, which is no more, sadly.
That makes me so sad.
But that was my hands-down favorite one. Mm-hmm. It was great. They did. I mean, like, every single festival is like, ooh, we're pro-community, and we're celebrating our community. And they're almost all kind of full of crap. I mean, it's just the truth. Like, and that's fine. Like, you can be a festival that's just showcasing things for profit, and I don't have a problem with that. I just don't pretend you're pro-community if you're not. Let's be fair.
Yep.
But the Minneapolis Burlesque Festival, like, they really were. They were at this gorgeous venue, with a beautiful backstage where they had free food and free booze and monitors set up so that you could watch the show for free while hanging out with all the other performers. And that was really awesome. They had after parties. They set up local hosts. I had, like, rides to and from the airport. It was really, really good. And the lineup was pretty stellar.
Yeah.
The best aerial act I've ever seen I saw there. Their headliners were great. I mean, the acts were really high quality. It was good.
Without naming names or anything, what made for the worst experiences? Why were the bad ones bad?
The bad ones were bad because they, and again, this is partially the pretending that you are pro-community and not being, they felt exploitative, you know, like, wherein it was, the shows were being sold as for like, audience members. You know what I mean? Like, for regular people to come and see. Whereas, in actuality, the people in the audience were all performers from the other nights who had bought full-price tickets, which is just, I gotta say, like, even if your event is a three-day event, if your performers are putting that event on for you for free, I mean, give them $25. It's insane to me. But so, like, that felt really exploitative. Places in the summer with no air conditioning, in really dusty backstages with no surfaces, hosts who are shit-talking burlesque, where they think that no one can hear them, except I'm down the stairs, and I heard him say it, and then goes on stage and spouts misogyny about people. You know, for every introduction, just horrifying. Putting three fan dances back to back, making your lineup in alphabetical order instead of by curation.
Oh, that's bizarre.
Just, I mean, and I get, like, you're putting on a huge event and it's a lot of work, but if you're not prepared for the amount of work that's involved, then you shouldn't do it. And that's just, and it's the same with, if you can't afford to give your performers tickets to see the show. Like, mm-hmm. if you can't afford to put on your show without selling it to the performers who are your show, mm-hmm. then you don't have a show. You don't have a show. And that's not like, I mean, most of them were great and then had like one or two things yes. that I would change.
Yep.
Very few of them were like, I hate this experience and I want to go.
Yeah.
You know, and like, that's the thing. And also it's just a thing where I feel like there are some communities that, and when you're putting on a festival, I get that you would want like the majority of your people to be local. But I also feel that if you don't have the talent pool to pull from mm-hmm. in order to put on a quality festival, I'm not saying don't put on a show, but don't call that a festival.
Mm-hmm. So who are festivals for? This has always been a sort of, I always wonder about.
They're definitely, it depends, right? In general, I expect that festivals are, and they're almost always marketed as a celebration of burlesque with the top burlesque performers in the field today for the regular people to come mm-hmm. and experience all at once. That's almost always how they're marketed mm-hmm. as. It's not always the case. Like, Bihoff isn't really a festival, the Exotic World is not right. really a festival, but some people would consider it so, and that's obviously aimed towards performers. Mm-hmm. Like, but most festivals say that they are like a celebration of nationally renowned or internationally renowned performers, top or less, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes it's true, and sometimes it isn't.
Either or both, from a performer point of view and a you know, potential audience member point of view. Do you think that the 4 hour long, one act after another thing is? Do you think that's the best way to experience?
No.
Burlesque in its.
I don't, and so I think that there. I've watched a 3 hour long show,
mm-hmm.
and been happy
mm-hmm.
and like enjoyed it the whole time. Do I think that it's the best way for someone to take in burlesque? No, because, like, even though I may have enjoyed it the whole time for that three-hour show, I also still don't remember all of it.
Right. That's always been my... You know... It blurs.
I see people charging the same amount of money
mm-hmm.
for a 10-person show as they do for these 30-people shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really strange, and I feel like if that's what it's going to be... then you might as well just put on a really kickin' 10-person show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, the Vancouver Festival has if I recall, had a really small
it's
lineup.
It's a small lineup,
but
yeah, I'm intrigued
by
that.
And I'm sure it was a really great lineup mm-hmm. because of that. I mean, it's not like people don't apply to Vancouver.
Right.
They certainly do. But, you know, they just choose to keep their festival smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. It's like, if you can make the same money and get the same draw with 10 incredible performances as you can with 30, wherein 10 of them are incredible, 15 of them are okay, and 5 of them are terrible,
mm-hmm.
why don't you just get the 10 people, and
mm-hmm.
then you can probably pay them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say. But I do think that there is a merit in having festivals for performers where you have like a 3 hour long
right.
thing with 20 people or 30 people or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can see that merit, because I will say that like I learned a ton from watching all that burlesque
mm-hmm.
that I wouldn't have done if I hadn't watched it all. I learned a ton. I learned a lot from the good performances, but I learned a lot from the bad ones
right.
too. And I am really happy about that. Mm-hmm. I'm glad.
It was a year well spent.
It was a year well spent. Yeah. Yeah.
You have a spot for one more act on the boat. Who are you bringing?
Yes. So, Stormy Leather
mm-hmm.
is incredible, and I love her. She does this act. It's so good! And so Stormy comes out in full male drag, and she just looks like a man.
She's immaculate.
It's not
stunning.
Drag. It's just she's a man.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes and she completely undresses, and while she's doing it, she walks in, you know, and she just looks like miserable, like she's had the most horrible day after the most horrible week after the most horrible month after the most horrible year, and completely drained of energy. And strips off all of her man clothing to reveal underneath herself completely naked and obviously female. And she takes a gun and sticks it up her pussy and kills herself.
Mm. It's incredible. That's chilling.
It's really just so good. And I've had huge struggles with gender confusion my whole life because, and I recently started feeling like, I feel like a lot of it was because of playing so many video games as a kid, wherein all of the heroes are male. And I never felt like, oh, I'm a girl, so I can't, whatever. I always felt like, oh, these boys are heroic and courageous. I must be a boy. which is like, I guess not typical, but is how I felt. So watching her do that, and like some of my acts kind of struggle with that as well, but it's just such a perfect way to express that, you know, that pain of that repression and not being able to express yourself and being boxed in by these labels and these weird black or white choices that we're forced to make or have our lives ruined.
Tell me about Danger Dude. I haven't met him yet.
But... Danger Dude! Danger Dude is my brother. And I love him. And Danger Dude is my boylesque ego. I want to call him a drag king because, and I know that a lot of burlesquers, when they do male drag on stage, they strip down and inevitably become female. And I don't want to do that with Danger Dude. Danger Dude is his own thing, and he is a man, and he's a very manly man, and he can do whatever the fuck he wants.
He's hot. I've seen the pictures. Yeah. I just haven't met him.
Well, you know, he likes really illicit bathroom sex.
That's why I like the pictures.
But so Danger right now, he only has one act, but we're working right now on a second one that I'm going to hopefully use to apply to the Vienna Boylesque Festival.
That's delightful.
Because I don't know. And you know, we have the New York Boylesque Festival, and I don't know if they would be okay with Danger Dude.
I'm not sure what their,
I don't know what their standpoint is, but I don't feel like a girl when I'm him. I feel like I'm him when I'm him, and which is how it, well, it's not how it should be, but it's how it should be for me, but the Vienna Boylesque Festival was very clear that it's okay with that sort of thing.
That's fantastic.
So... I don't know. I'm making currently an act for him to Princes of the Universe. and I think it's going to be lovely.
I can't wait to see
it. And we'll see.
I can't wait to see it.
So yeah, that's Danger Dude.
And what is Roar Burlesque?
Roar Burlesque is sort of a creation between Stella and I. And we made it like originally because we wanted to put on a Monty Python show. It's like,
that was a good show.
It was so fun. So that was the original, like, just idea of why we were going to create it. In my head, I wanted to create, because we have a bunch of nerd burlesque troupes here, and I wanted to do one that was more accessible and less exclusive and not quite as... I don't want to say cliche, because I don't want to say that the other ones are cliche, because that's not what I'm saying.
Right.
Try in different themes. So that was the original purpose of War. And so we have the monthly show at Cabin, which is just totally anything goes and is not a theme show. And I think it's important to do that because, I mean, first of all, we don't want to just have a show. We kind of want to have, like, we want to create, like, a couple of shows, maybe, you know, like, we want to do things that are better and more interesting, and I feel like, so what we're trying to do with RAR, with the bigger shows, is that we want to create these sort of high-quality, themed, loosely things, where all of our friends of all types of burlesque persuasions can come and do and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was the great thing about the history theme is that then we can have, you know, Jim Minsky doing 20s, you know, flapper dancing fits in perfectly to this nerdy, mm-hmm. you know, scheme. And I love that. And that's what we want to do. And we also, we kind of want to make it more like a traditional vaudeville show where there's more sketches mm-hmm. and maybe more variety. So it's, I think, something that we're trying to do to set the show apart and put it at a different level. Because, like, I mean, I know that nerds really enjoy seeing, like, act after act after act of favorite character, mm-hmm. favorite character, favorite, and I'm not knocking that. Like, there's totally a space for that. But, like, I, as a nerd, enjoy it when people talk at me. And I really like plays and stories. And I know that most nerds really like plays and stories. And that's what we want to do. And, like, we don't want to make scripted things. Maybe someday. But, like, it's not what we're going for. But we are going for something that has a little bit more follow-through and transition than just act, 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 mm-hmm. act.
So, talking about packing small, there is only room on this island for you to bring one of your own acts. Which one are you bringing?
So my polar bear number would be great. Okay, and here's why. First of all, because it's pure fun, mm-hmm. and I really like it. I like my polar bear number because originally it was made as a lost act, if you remember that
I just love
show.
That.
And I actually really don't like Lost. I really do like the polar bears on Lost, which are like, and like, here's the thing, right? The polar bear on Lost, he comes out, and you're like, why the fuck is there this polar bear on this island? And then they don't do anything with it. They just forget about that there's polar bears on the island. They just ignore it. Like, that's really a very ignorable fact, apparently.
Yes.
And it's just so... And so when I made the act, I was like, I want this act to make no sense. I just want it... Not make no sense, but just be completely stupid mm-hmm. and random. People be like, why is there a polar bear stripping on the stage right now? And I hope that I do that. But then I love it because in its own way, it's kind of a classic
It's
number.
Very classic. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's got all of those classic tropes. It's got the tassel twirling and the paddle skirts and the triangle bra, you know? And I think it's just so stupid.
My favorite part of it is that you cover your nose when you...
Yeah, well, so you don't
like polar
see
bears
me hunting you, so I can hide in the snow.
So you will, in fact, be the unexplained polar bear on the island.
Yeah, I want to be the unexplained polar bear on the island.
I think we can do that.
Yeah, and scare away all the monkeys.
You can bring one performer with you.
Okay, and I couldn't choose. I know I said that.
We're already breaking the rules, and it's the first one.
We're breaking the rules. Okay. I'm not good at following rules. So, okay, and I was split between you and Albert, and here's why. Albert, for one, because if I didn't bring him to the island, he would find his way onto the island just to yell at me and then leave.
Yep.
But also
he wouldn't leave right away, though.
He'd hang around for a while and be a pain in the ass. But he's so entertaining, mm-hmm. like, constantly. Mm-hmm. And also, he would be able to break coconuts open for me.
Can he do that, really?
I am sure he could somehow. Mm-hmm. He's very strong. But he's just, like, pure entertainment.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason why I would want to bring you is a similar reason. I feel like I would have a good time with you there. Like, we would be like, we're not in New York. We would hang out. We would make fake straw hats. And fake sunglasses and lay on the beach and drink out of coconuts. And you're clever enough that I think that you can build us a really great hut. See, so I don't know. I don't know.
All right, we'll head to the island and then Albert can find his own way.
Yeah.
He will anyway.
Well,
I think the boat is full.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being the first on the island.
Thanks so much.
And I say let's go crack open the coconuts.
Let's do it.
All right. This has been the first Desert Island Strips. Thank you, Danger Doll.
Thank you very much. The tide is high, but I-